hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin, and I'm here with you once again this Thursday morning in glorious San Francisco, California. I'm standing in the Mission District. There's slight noise of traffic, but it's okay. And it's a fine day. Been doing a lot of missioning after our wonderful Petaluma mixer at the seed bank last Sunday. So many wonderful younger farmers and elders expressing their solidarity and support of our fine burgeoning movement. And today I'm joined by another Californian on the telephone, Tim Van Wagner, who is a great agrarianist, agriculturalist leader up in the Sierra foothills. Tim, are you on the line?
I am. Hey, Severin.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Tim, would you mind introducing yourself and your project to our fine listeners?
Sure. I'm up in Nevada City. We're about 2,400 feet, small community in the foothills, kind of in the forest. This is where I grew up, and I'm involved with a project up here called the Living Lands Agrarian Network, and basically what we're doing is we're farming land that we don't own, so there's lots of land up here that's more or less fallow. You know, people have full-time jobs, and the land has fallen out of production. So in the last 4 years, we've come in and we've, formed relationships with these people and started to farm their land. And so in the process, we've created this network, the Agrarian Network, that is now a nonprofit organization that's working to support farmers and agrarian education in our community here.
And let's talk about the community here, what the history of that community is, and what the land and kind of farming is that you're doing on that land.
Okay, yeah. Well, this is historically, you know, agriculture and mining were the two main focuses of industry up here. The gold rush was, you know, hugely powerful up here, informing the landscape. And of course, the farms back then had to be close by because there wasn't this massive transportation system that we rely on now. So there was a good amount of dairy. There were close to town, close to the centers, there were market gardens. A lot of fruit actually was grown here. And kind of the progression of it was that a lot of the fruit at first was grown and consumed locally, but then as the railroad became more of a force, a lot of the fruit was grown for export to the East Coast. Around 1930 or so, mining kind of started to peter off as different legislation came down, because a lot of the mining up here was the hydraulic mining, so meaning that basically they're washing the hillsides away to find the gold, and all that sediment that they were washing away went into the rivers and ended up down in the Central Valley, where it affected agriculture down there. And so the court rulings, you know, basically said that you can't do this anymore, and so that pretty much put a halt on the industry up here. So since then, it's been, you know, it's had some periods of downturn where the mining industry left, and I think in the recent 20 years, we've seen a great increase in just kind of wealth and people generally coming up from the Bay Area, and just, with the general economic state of the United States, an increase in wealth in this area. But it hasn't really been revolving around mining or agriculture.
So the streams have been washed away by the water from the flumes, from the hydraulic water pumps that were washing
down. Yeah, there was
the
a lot of damage that was done from that era. Although it's amazing to see that how the forests have regrown. There's pictures of this area that the hills are totally denuded, totally logged, and but now there's great forests here, large trees. But you know, at the same time that the mining went away, the agriculture also went away, and so a lot of the agricultural lands have just been kind of revegetated with invasives, but also with natives, forest land. And so what we're doing up here is we're farming within the forest, and so that's one of the constraints on this area, is that it's forest land. So the land that has great sun and great soil is not just, you know, all over the place.
Now, let's talk a little bit about infrastructure. I don't know how long your family's been in that area and if they were having any part in constructing the mine. but I've been looking up in the foothills at the barns and the way that they're built. And they seem like they're built a little bit like the mines were, kind of a little bit slipshod. But then sometimes there's some really fancy Victorian filigree. What kind of barns do you guys have, and what condition were they in when you found them?
You know, where we are, there's not a lot of those old barns. A little bit lower down, you find a lot of them, but one of our barns is a newer barn, but it's not really built with the old timbers, the old way they used to do it. I can't really speak so much to that. Yeah, it would be nice to have a big old barn with, you know, with everything complete in it for your animals and for your hay and storage and all that. But that's one of the barriers we're coming up against, is that farming on other people's land, it's, you know, the land is really important, but also just the structures and the infrastructure that is available to use for all your different operations is so important. So actually one of the things we're doing, because we don't own this land, and investing in land that you don't own is, you know, it's a decision you need to make. You need to either make it or not. And it helps your operation a lot if you can feel like whatever you invest in that land is going to be with you and secure for a good time to come. And so what we've done is formed this relationship with our independent farmers and the nonprofit, so that the nonprofit is actually investing in the land, in the infrastructure, and then providing the land for the farmers to farm. So in a way, it's subsidizing our local agriculture here.
And who are the farmers? Where are you guys coming from, and what are you growing?
Well, right now there's four of us. There's myself, there's an older man, Leo Chapman. He's in his mid-50s, and he's recently come to agriculture in the last 5 or 6 years. Before that, he was a general contractor, and then he kind of started this whole thing up here, where he kind of got sick of building, and it turned out to be really good timing because of what's going on now. But at that time, when he was really just ready to make a shift, he approached one of our original landowners up here, and it was about an acre and a half or 2 acres that he was farming on their land. And he started out by doing a small CSA, and then I came along and joined him a couple years later. And then since then, we have we've had a number of different people join us for different stints of time. We've had interns come for, you know, the whole season, about 8 months. We've had about, every year we have about 5 or 6 interns, and one of those interns stayed with us for a second year. So he learned a lot in the first year, and then he felt like he wanted to have his own project going on. And so what we were able to do was to provide him with that land, the space that he needed to pursue his interests, and to kind of just support one another through labor, through advice, through, with the animals especially, which is what I'm involved with, just through like helping out when I need to get away or whatnot. And then the other two farmers are a couple of young women who they're doing a project called Soil Sisters, and it's a women's collective farm. And they are growing a bunch of different varieties of vegetables for a CSA and farmers market. But they're really, really trying to focus on women's empowerment, and so their project's really exciting.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's okay. I can't hear you very well, so I can't. Sometimes I just speak over you.
No, I had the same problem. But listen, what I wanted to know is maybe you could talk about what it's like to be part of a team and what's good about that, and then how each individual part of the team, each pony in the each pony in the wagon train has its own ideas and starts to pull in its own direction.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, it's a balance because when you're part of a team, you get supported by everybody else in that team. That's the idea, at least. And you're getting support to pursue what you're interested in. At least that's what we're doing up here. And so everybody has a different interest, and because there's so many different ways you can go in agriculture, that's our main focus, is to support each other in whatever it is we want to learn. What we've done is created this network, and basically through the nonprofit, we are all connected because we have a rotational communal work day where, for one, our internship program is shared amongst all the different farmers. And so the interns, you know, throughout the week, they rotate around. One day they're with me, one day they're with one of the other farmers, and so on and so forth. And so they're getting exposed to a lot of different systems, a lot of different ideas, and then also the farmers are getting that help, that additional help on each of those days. And then on Wednesdays, what we do is we have a group work day where all of the farmers, all of our volunteers, all of our interns, we work on one site with one farmer, and that farmer is kind of in charge of having some projects ready, some larger projects, hopefully, so that they can really make use of all the different people there and the different skills that everybody has. And so it's really a way to help each other out and get things done. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's kind of a blend between the craft program, which is cooperative. I forget what CRAFT stands for. The CRAFT programs and the Crop Mob. CRAFT is...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cooperative Rural Education Farmer Training. What is it? Cooperative Regional Agricultural...
Farming Training?
Something. Anywho,
like that.
You better keep going because I'm clearly not on my balls.
Well, yeah, that whole... Did you call it the Crop Mob?
Well, the Crop Mob model is where everybody shows up on one farm and pools resources, pools labor.
Exactly. And yeah, it's really similar to that. I just read about that. Ours is a little bit more maybe structured, where it's like, you know, when you're gonna get all these different hands to help you, and so
it's like rotational.
It's rotational, and it's a set schedule, which is, you know, it's nice that you can really depend on it, and you can save certain projects for certain days. Another advantage of kind of our network is that we're able to pool our markets. So at Farmers Market, we actually sell under the name of the nonprofit. And so in the beginning of the season, we all get together and we say, this is what I'm going to grow, this is what I'm going to grow, da-da-da. And so we can really... have a really nice, robust booth at Farmers Market. None of us actually depend, you know, 100% on Farmers Market for our income, and so it really works out that we can all share a booth because we don't need as much space. But everybody can kind of decide what they want, what they're going to focus on, and a lot of that focus has to do with the microclimate of their site, because we're up here in the hills, and it's amazing how a mile from one site on the other side of a ridge, you know, it can be on average, you know, eight degrees cooler than the other site, and it has to do with exposure, drainage, and just general wind patterns and weather patterns.
And how did you? I mean, what was the process like in the community where you were making these rules up for yourselves and kind of deciding how you're going to govern this brand new collective?
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys, was there beer involved?
It's been an ongoing process. It's really been just an evolution of each season. We've had slightly different relationships and different structures, and refining that structure so that we strike that balance between kind of the group work, supporting each other, but still maintaining a certain degree of autonomy so that everybody can still feel like they're the head of their project, that they can focus on their project, and that that they're able to put the time that they want to put into their project. And that's probably been the biggest piece of it, is really just finding that balance. And at the same time, throwing in the economics of it all and figuring out, okay, like, is how much labor do I need on my farm? And is this new model where we have the help of the interns and the farmers at different times of the week, is this enough for what I'm going to do? And so it's in the beginning of the season, there's a lot of just dialogue about, I'm going to be growing this, and I'm going to need this much help to do it. And so just kind of keeping all the conversations open, and it's still an evolution. This is a whole another year of figuring things out. And we came up this winter, this is a new structure we came up with, and we might find that it actually needs some more tweaking, which it probably will. But that's part of the beauty of it, is that it's like a farm. It's a farmer cooperative where everybody has a say in what they need, and so we can address those needs every year, and hopefully get closer and closer to what's ideal.
It really, that really resonates with me, because yesterday we were at Green Gulch Farm meeting with Sarah Jane, who's another young farmer, and who's working at a farm and managing that Green Gulch fabulous farm down mm-hmm. in the valley that's been going for such a long time and has kind of achieved, you know, they do happen to be in a Zen center, so there's a certain uh-huh. harmoniousness inherent in that, but I think that the organism and the social relations and the expectations and the whole kind of the whole culture of the place has kind of settled out over the course of those, you know, many decades.
Mm-hmm.
And it's come into its own hum and its own rhythm and its own, you know, the way that it's going to settle out and be. And I feel like with any of these new farm projects and community projects and
mm-hmm.
It's like having enough people who are committed to the long term and committed to the
to the
process that it takes to get to that equilibrious humming and the harmony of that, you know, where all the people are getting what they need out of it and are being able mm-hmm. to survive and succeed. I feel like that's almost as much work as the farming is, the commitment to harmony.
Absolutely, and you know what, with a lot of the, in our area, there's a number of farms, and so this time of year, it's really exciting because there's probably 20 or 25 interns or young farmers in the area, and so it's really, in the last 4 years, I mean, that's increased a lot, and it's really great because it's created this social network, social scene for all these people, and that's just as big a part of what everybody's trying to do, because if you're just farming in isolation, you're going to find that I think you're lacking in other parts of your life. You're not being stimulated by other people your age and not finding that community. And so I think that we're really lucky here because we have potlucks, we have all these different social events, and it's just people are trying to create a life around agriculture and not just, you know, farm to farm and to make money or to grow food, but really to try and complete that picture.
Well, and we've seen what happens if you just sit on your farm, you know, you turn into like a huge plant dork and start singing to yourself, and it can be a little bit awkward.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
so we've got to prevent that. And speaking of celebration and community, I wanted to reassert my commitment to include Nevada City on our West Coast tour. We're going to start up in Washington State and work our way down the West Coast. My goal and my commitment to the world is to finish my film by the end of the summer so that we can be bringing the finished product down in the early fall down the coast, and in each place convening a collaborative celebratory space for young farmers to meet, greet, and talk mm-hmm. to each other about how the season went. And so I'm really excited to come and see the scene up there. Tell me, Is there room for more young farmers in your community?
Oh, absolutely. There's lots of land. I mean, land is expensive up here. It's California, and that's just the way it is. However, there's like what we're doing, there's ways around it. And generally, the community up here, the broad community, is very receptive to local agriculture, and to the point now where we have people coming to us saying, we have 10 acres, we have some housing on this 10 acres, we want you to farm it, we've seen what you've done, it's beautiful, we really support this, we see it as the way of the future. There's lots of people who've come to us with that sort of setup. And just as far as markets go, I mean, there's CSAs up here, and while I think that the CSA farms have really done a lot to, you know, increase their memberships, it's really just a drop in the pool, drop in the ocean of how many people are in this county. There's 100,000 in this county, and there's probably only 800 CSA shares total. So if you look at that, there's lots of room there. There's a local foods market. There's farmers markets. There's great restaurants up here that are really on board with buying local food. And so I'd encourage anybody, if they're looking to start farming, to check this area out and hook up with the farms, the farmers, and just to feel it out. I think it's got a lot of potential for people to at least plug in and get started and see where it takes them, because it's really just a journey.
Pretty special journey, and let's make sure they know how to get in touch with you. How do they find out about the Agrarian Network?
Well, I'm going to give my website. It's www.livinglandsagrariannetwork.org. You can also just Google Living Lands, Nevada City. You'll find lots of information about what we're doing there. We have a land bank link on there. So right now we have more land available than we're farming. And so for people interested in that, they should definitely look at the website and see if there's something that matches their dream. We also have information about our internship program, although we're full this year. We've already got our interns. We do different workshops. We do social events, potlucks, and different fundraising events throughout the summer. And so that's the best way. My contact information is on that website, and feel free to email me with any questions.
Well, Tim, I'm so impressed. I remember when I first met you, you were carrying a collarbone of a whale. And we were down in Southern California, and I knew then that you were special, but I didn't know just quite how special of a visionary you were. And it's been really a great pleasure to see you guys pioneering some really special new social infrastructure up there in that fabulous funky foothill area. Those of you who don't know about the Yuba River, you should go and learn about it. It's one of the more sacred spots.
Reason enough to come up here.
Reason enough, really. So anyway,
well,
we'll leave it at that. Thank you so much, Tim. Thank you all for joining us again. Be on point for our October, November West Coast tour. And thank you. Oh, I forgot to make an announcement. This weekend is Beltane. It's May Day. I'm going to be on the airplane. Yeah, I hate the airplane, but I'm going to be on the airplane back east because we're going to be working at the Hickory's Farm in Ridgefield, Connecticut. And tomorrow, May 1st, which is Saturday, we're going to be picking stones out of the field because it was a very cold winter and a lot of stones emerged and fell off of walls. And then in the afternoon, it's the onion planting party at Hardy Root Farm in Tivoli, New York. So if you guys, any of you are listening and happen to be in the Hudson Valley / Connecticut area, you know, come on over. And the information is all up on the websites of those two farms, Hickory's Farm and Hardy Roots Farm. And happy spring, everybody. Talk to you again next week. So exciting. Ciao.
All right. Thanks, everyone.